Our second case for the day is Collins versus Hamilton, 02-39-35. Mr. Steiner.
Good morning. May it please the court. In our view, the district court made two mistakes in interpreting the federal statute and regulations relating to that statute concerning the early and periodic screening, diagnosis, and treatment program. Medicaid program, known in the state of Indiana as the Health Watch program, that's the term I'm going to use during the argument. First, the court failed to understand, properly interpret the requirement that Medicaid benefits only be paid in circumstances where a child is going through an active treatment process in a particular institution. As we understand those regulations that relate to this particular case, the federal regulations, which we have some reason that we need to follow, it's a situation where Medicaid payments occur when there is a plan that is put into place that is affected, that is designed to improve a child's mental health functioning at the earliest possible time. In this particular case, the district court...
The statutory words are correct and ameliorated.
That's correct, Your Honor. Although...
Does that mean improve?
Well, it's correct and ameliorate in the statute, but then we do have these regulations which we believe define the meaning of correct and ameliorate. There are regulations that the state is bound to follow, and we really think that the district court probably went astray in looking at a dictionary definition of ameliorate.
That definition of that term hasn't changed since 1963, the definition that was used here.
Years
of a pretty consistent definition of what ameliorate means.
You're correct, Your Honor, but I also believe that we're bound to follow the regulations as well that are designed...
That's the objective here, what these regulations, the hope, the expectation, the objective is that the people involved will get better, maybe even be, whatever cured means, maybe they'll be cured. But how can you distinguish between these various settings based on that kind of an idea?
I think you can distinguish to some degree, not necessarily the settings, Your Honor, because I don't know that that's really the issue in this case. I know the plaintiffs are concerned about the particular facilities or institutions where they might be able to send their children. In this particular situation, they seem to be interested in sending children to psychiatric residential treatment facilities. But in this particular case, the evidence is clear that the state has been providing these benefits through what might be called the hospital option, through psychiatric hospitals, both private and government-run psychiatric hospitals, and inpatient psychiatric units in general hospitals.
But both are much more restrictive settings for a child that may not need that intensive situation.
That's the argument made by the plaintiffs in the case, but I don't believe, if we look closely at the record in this particular case, that it's borne out, that there is any evidence that was really before the district court judge that established that the treatment that a child might be receiving, say, in a psychiatric hospital, is particularly more intense or not user-friendly compared to the treatment that person might receive in the psychiatric residential treatment facility. That was an assumption I think the judge was making, but not based on evidence in the case.
Well, are you suggesting that the state should not have to provide residential treatment ever, or that it is not required to do it in a PRTF setting but must provide it in another setting?
I'm suggesting, yes, Your Honor, I'm suggesting that the state has obligations under the program, which I call Health Watch, the state term for the program, the state definitely has obligations, and those obligations are to pay for, through Medicaid benefits, treatment that is designed to improve a child's condition. And of course, this might take, you know, X amount of time or Y amount of time. We don't know always exactly how much time that's going to take. But I would point out that there's nothing in the record that indicates that in the psychiatric hospitals in Indiana, particularly the state psychiatric hospitals, that there's any time limit necessarily placed on the treatment program for children in that facility.
Well, what's significant about the PRTF setting from a medical treatment perspective? Is it possible that the placement in this setting could, in some cases, be medically necessary?
Well, our view of this is that there are equivalent treatment options available in Indiana already, particularly in the psychiatric hospital setting, whether it be, you know, a public setting or a private setting, that would be equivalent to the situation with the psychiatric residential.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is, why doesn't the state want to include PRTF settings? And getting following up with something Judge Evans says, aren't they the least restrictive? And it's not a financial issue, at least as I understand it. I mean, I just don't get that.
Well, I'm not sure, Your Honor, that it is the less restrictive necessarily than some of these other settings. That's the argument that the plaintiffs make or suggested. But the evidence, we don't have a fully developed record in this case that really shows that those facilities are particularly less restrictive than some of the other settings that are already authorized to be used in the state of Indiana. So when we look at this situation, I don't think that we can really necessarily conclude that they're less restrictive or better for the child than some of the other settings that are already authorized. And we must consider the fact that you can't force facilities to be Medicaid providers in any state, and there isn't even any evidence in this case that these facilities have been actively seeking participation in the Medicaid program as providers. It is true that
they're getting their money from the county welfare fund. In any event, isn't
well,
that?
They may be, Your Honor, but there was another issue in this case, of course. The plaintiffs had contended or were concerned about the fact that the state, through the CHINS process, child in need.
That's not being appealed, sir.
That's not being appealed. But the district court did find that that was an appropriate way that the state could provide residential services, not necessarily services that are required by this Health Watch program, the federal program, but could provide some residential care for children in situations where the parent or guardian maybe no longer were able to adequately deal with the child because of whatever problems they had with acting out or with their mental condition, and the government then was paying for that. That's correct, you know, not necessarily through Medicaid funds, but the government was paying for that.
Didn't the state then pass legislation to prohibit the use of these CHIMS petitions to get kids in residential treatment?
No, not to prohibit, Your Honor, but to not to do it necessarily in a situation where it was merely to a voluntary act on the part of the parent to want to place the child in a particular facility. But that doesn't mean, and in fact, the record's clear that, for example, even Lake County, where Brandon Collins was located, has continued to use the CHINS proceedings when they've been approached by parents of the child to place them in an appropriate setting, perhaps a residential setting, when that would be in the best interest of the child. The state, after all, has an obligation and duty to make sure the children are not in situations where they're being harmed. And when the state becomes aware of that kind of situation, that's why CHINS is there. The state takes action, and always has, and will in the future take action to protect children.
So what responsibilities does the state have for a child who requires residential treatment for a physical illness that might not or will not be cured, or where there's not a good prospect for recovery.
Well, it would probably be similar, Your Honor, to this situation. The question really is there a treatment program that can be put in place and effectuated which could improve the child's functioning, whether it be mental or physical? And that needs to be evaluated in each particular situation. That's one of the obligations that the state Medicaid division would have in these kind of situations. When someone wants to have reimbursement through the Medicaid program, it's an obligation of a state agency to look at the expenses that are being offered for Medicaid reimbursement and see if those expenses fit within the program requirements.
So you're saying the standard is no different if it's a physical illness versus a mental?
That's correct.
It's difficult to apply to psychiatric problems, isn't it?
Say that again, Your Honor.
I say it's pretty difficult, more difficult perhaps to apply to psychiatric problems to determine whether a particular kind of treatment is going to be effective in the long run. It's not very easy, is it?
I suspect you're correct, Your Honor, although I suspect that psychiatrists and the professionals that would be making these recommendations would feel that they have some idea of what the treatment programs might do for a particular child. That's why they develop a plan and try to carry it through, whether it involves some kind of therapy or use of medication. But there's some expertise. Yes, when we're dealing with the mental area, it might be somewhat more difficult. But our view of this is that the district court judge has too relaxed the standards that are required by the Medicaid Act and the regulations by suggesting that the state might be obligated to pay for the treatment of a child simply because they were placed in a psychiatric residential treatment facility. Our view is that at a minimum, there needs to be an analysis of whether we're having this kind of plan that's designed to improve the child's condition as soon as we can effectuate that improvement. And if that's the case, then there's an obligation on the part of Medicaid. If that's not the case, even if they're in a residential psychiatric treatment facility, the state shouldn't have an obligation under the Medicaid program to pay for that.
There are a number of states that interpret this set of regulations consistent with how the plaintiff is urging. Well, how the district court interpreted it.
I don't think.
Are there any states that have interpreted it as Indiana?
I don't know that there are, Your Honor. I think what we're really looking at is states that are using the treatment option of using the psychiatric residential treatment facility. And that's an option that a state can utilize. Some states do that, but I don't think any cases, if we look closely at the cases cited by the plaintiffs, are on point in this particular situation. Not one of those cases indicates that a state must use that option. What they really talk about is if they're using the option, what are the responsibilities of the state? The other, that kind of leads into the second point that I've wanted to make in this presentation, and that is that there really isn't an obligation on the part of the state of Indiana to use the psychiatric treatment facility. All of the materials that are cited by the plaintiff, including some comments that don't carry a great deal of weight, indicate that that's an option, that in some cases there may be differences between psychiatric residential treatment facilities and hospitals. But it doesn't indicate that a state must use that particular option. And in this particular situation, the evidence shows this. The evidence shows that the state is using, as I indicated, the psychiatric hospitals and the inpatient programs to meet the needs of children in Indiana. And the evidence does not show, and this is very important. We're dealing with a summary judgment in this case, not a very fully developed record. And the evidence does not show that there are inadequate resources provided in the state of Indiana for children regarding this Medicaid program, and through the hospitals and through the inpatient programs. If there was evidence of that, this might be a different situation, but there is not, and I think you need to take that into account. There's one other point I want to make before I sit down, because I want to reserve some time, and that is I just want to point out feeling, and this is kind of an obligation that I have to let the court know that something else is going on in the state of Indiana. The Indiana General Assembly has recently passed some legislation which could ultimately meet the concerns of the district court in this case. There's a provision that's going to go into effect July the 1st of this year, Indiana Code 12-19-7.5, which could ultimately lead to a situation where the state would make use of residential psychiatric treatment facilities. And that would depend to some extent on whether the state actually amends its plan and whether the federal authorities approve the amendment. I'm sorry that I'm out of time. I don't know whether I'll have any time for rebuttal.
I don't think you will.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. We urge that the court reverse the decision of the district court.
May it please the court. Brandon Collins is now an 8-year-old boy with a history of serious psychiatric problems, and because of these problems, he's been in and out of acute care in psychiatric hospitals many times. But what Brandon needs is psychiatric residential treatment. This is longer-term care than the acute short-term care he would get in a hospital, but it's not perpetual care. It is a 24-hour integrated program of therapies that's specified by a treatment team in an individual plan of care that will be reviewed every 30 days to ensure, among other things, that inpatient services on an inpatient basis are still absolutely necessary.
Now, as I understand, the state pays for the direct cost of the therapy, but not for the residential cost.
That's correct,
Is that
Johnny.
Right?
But, of course, for a psychiatric residential treatment facility, part of the treatment is the residential aspect of it, just as it would be in a hospital. But it's undisputed that no matter what Brandon shows, he will never, under any circumstances, get Medicaid payment from the state of Indiana for the residential treatment facility services, even though they're necessary under an EPSDT program, because the state will only pay for acute short-term care in a hospital. What Brandon and probably the other children in the class have is a cyclical illness with acute flare-ups. The state wants to pay for just the acute flare-ups and not the underlying illness. But it's clear under EPSDT law that the state has to pay for both. The state has conceded that under EPSDT law, they have to pay for any coverable service that is found to be necessary under an EPSDT screening. And it's also clear from the law that psychiatric residential treatment facilities are coverable services. But what the state is claiming is that it provides necessary psychiatric services through the inpatient hospital setting. At the same time, it also argues that the children in the class won't qualify for those services because their conditions are long-term and that those conditions can't be ameliorated.
Yeah, you alluded to the fact that it would, you know, be best for him to be in a long-term type facility and get that review every 30 days. What is the medical disadvantage to the child to providing these services through inpatient psychiatric care in hospitals? You probably answered that by the acute care, but what's the medical disadvantage of handling it in that way?
The problem is that Brandon and none of the kids can get the services they need in a hospital. For one thing, Indiana law, which we have provided as supplemental authority, states that Medicaid will not pay for psychiatric hospital services unless it is shown that those services are necessary in only a hospital setting. And obviously that's not the case with Brandon or Omega or the other kids. And second, a psychiatric hospital cannot, by definition, provide the long-term residential care that these kids need. It's undisputed that the hospital only provides the acute short-term care. That's the reason that Brandon was discharged from the psychiatric hospital at Behavioral Health Care in May of 2000. He no longer needed the acute care he was getting. He needed longer-term care, and the hospital couldn't provide that.
Is this residential care analogous to nursing home care?
In that it's an inpatient setting.
You're talking about elderly people there, but
right.
Here you're talking about kids. But
there are several types of settings that are part of the inpatient service under Medicaid, and one of them would be a nursing home, the hospital, and then the other is the psychiatric residential treatment facility. Part of the inpatient, any inpatient service, is the room board aspect of it. the Medicaid regulations, which we have also filed as supplemental authority, define inpatient as meaning a person who receives room, board, and professional services in an institution for 24 hours or longer. And the Medicaid agency, the federal Medicaid agency itself, has stated the same thing in its May 22, 2001 clarification of the definition of a psychiatric residential treatment facility. Given the treatment differences between a psychiatric residential treatment facility and a psychiatric hospital, the state simply doesn't have the option of denying the residential treatment and instead trying to substitute a hospital. The children can't get the services they need in the hospital, and they probably wouldn't be eligible for it anyway under Indiana's Medicaid law.
Is there anything in the legislative history when Congress amended 1396DH, and that was back in 72, that indicates that these services should be provided in PRTFs?
Your Honor, it's stated in 1396DH, when they defined inpatient psychiatric services, that it would include both the hospital and whatever setting was specified by the secretary, and then the secretary has specifically specified a psychiatric residential treatment facility in the regulations. The EPSDT program was designed, and the legislative intent there was to provide any covered or coverable service under the Medicaid program to children who need it to correct or ameliorate their conditions, and inpatient psychiatric services are one of those covered services, which of course does now include psychiatric residential treatment facilities.
How does this new legislation that Mr. Steiner told us about that takes effect in July going to affect the situation?
Your Honor, I don't believe that it deals, I'm not sure that it deals with Medicaid payment. It wouldn't affect it. The state is required under federal Medicaid law to provide any service that's necessary under an EPSDT screening if it's coverable. This is coverable. They have to pay for it, no matter who else pays for it or might pay for it. For example, the law now states that a county is prohibited from filing a CHINS action for the sole reason of getting these children these kinds of services. They're permitted to provide these services through a voluntary placement agreement, where the child wouldn't lose custody and they wouldn't file a CHINS, but they're not required to do that. And since they would have to pay for it through county money, it's unlikely that they would. And no matter what happens, the state still has an obligation through Medicaid to pay for these services. It can't force that obligation off onto the counties when the law is so clear. The state is also incorrect to the extent that it claims that the care that children need can't be provided because the conditions requiring long-term care can't be ameliorated. Essentially, this argument comes down to two points, that Medicaid-coverable services can't be long-term and that they must actually cure the condition. Neither of these claims is true. It's coverable EPSDT services are certainly not limited to short-term services. The psychiatric residential treatment certainly has to be have a goal of correcting or ameliorating the condition, and it has to be designed to further that goal. But the applicable laws use qualifying, not absolute terms, when they're discussing the duration of services. For example, the services must be reasonably expected to improve the condition or prevent further regression so that eventually the services will no longer be necessary. There is no time limit in any of the laws. And the federal law clearly does not require that the service actually cure the condition. The EPSDT law very clearly states that it's correct or ameliorate the condition, and as the district court found, ameliorating isn't curing, it's making it better or more tolerable. And it's undisputed in this case that the psychiatric residential treatment facility services will improve the plaintiff's conditions. Omega's doctor said that after a year of this service, he will not need the service any longer. And Brandon's doctors have also said that he would benefit highly from a psychiatric residential treatment facility with a structured setting. If the law required that services actually cure the child in order to be covered, then a child with diabetes, for example, couldn't get Medicaid payment for insulin treatments because those treatments wouldn't cure the diabetes. That's clearly not what Congress intended when it made the EPSDT amendment. The law simply does not provide for any deadline by which a child has to be cured or else no longer get payment, and the state hasn't cited any authority for that claim. what the state is saying, in effect, is that these children are too disabled to be entitled to Medicaid-covered care. Because their conditions are such that they're going to require longer-term care, the state believes it doesn't have to pay for that. So under the state's theories, no child in the class will ever be able to obtain Medicaid payment for services that have been found necessary under EPSDT, even though those are coverable, the services are coverable by Medicaid. But again, the state hasn't cited any legal authority for that claim. And the whole point of the EPSDT program is to make sure that children get coverable services and treatment that will help their conditions as soon as possible, because Congress recognized that the sooner you treat a condition, the less likely it is to get worse or become irreversible. And the EPSDT program was designed to avoid putting children in situations like Brandon's, where he is frequently and temporarily provided only these short-term emergency-type services, when actually his condition could be improved by different, less restrictive, longer-term care that is also coverable. The state's failure to provide the covered services to Brandon into the class violates the Medicaid Act, and the district court's decision should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Steiner, you're out of time. We will take the case under advisement. And again, thanks to both counsel for the fine presentations here.